Okay, welcome to Friday, December 5th, 2025. I'm Mike Adams. As always, thank you for joining me today. We're going to be covering in detail the situation in Europe, where Western European nations appear to be on a suicide path. And we have a new quote from Alexander Dugin out of Russia that is rather alarming. It's worth covering. I've also got additional updates for you. I've got a demonstration of the book engine. I've got a couple of special reports. One is called 2026, the Year of Acceleration. And I think you'll find that very interesting. Some trends predictions about 2026. Now, it's worth mentioning that I have a long-standing prediction on the books that the United States of America, as we know it, would not survive past the end of 2025. So we are now at the end. I mean, we're in the last month, and hopefully things will hold together for the rest of this month, which means that that prediction would be premature. I'm not hoping for it to be proven true. That was actually just a warning of how divided our country had become. And I started that prediction many years ago. And of course, I think we've only seen an exacerbation of the division. We have these radical leftists now at the point of practically wanting to start a civil war. They haven't done it yet, thank goodness. Trump is positioning National Guard troops in, 20 plus major cities across the United States in an effort to try to prevent that. And it looks like that's going to hold. I'm not anticipating a breakup of this union by the end of this month, which is a good thing. So this is one prediction where I'm happy to be wrong or early. I suppose, history will tell us which one of those is true. But regardless of the timing, what's important is that we are ready for what's coming, because clearly the dollar is going to collapse at some point. Hard to know the timing, but it's going to happen. Also, it's clear that political division has never been stronger or more obvious than it is right now, at least in our lifetimes, probably. Maybe in, 1861 it was like this, but since then, no, I don't think we've seen a scenario quite like this. So things are going to get interesting in 2026, and that's what my special report is all about. Now, you may recall that I have no interview today, but I will have interviews for you starting up again next week, Monday and Tuesday. Those interviews have already been recorded at this point, and they're both really fantastic. And on Tuesday, I've got an interview. Well, I'm not even going to tell you who yet, but you're going to love it. It's really great. It's another decentralized TV episode for Tuesday. You will absolutely love it, so get ready for that. I want to interject a note here about AI avatars. And there are currently two companies that offer very convincing AI avatars. And those companies are called HeyGen, H-E-Y-G-E-N, and just recently Kling AI, that's K-L-I-N-G, Kling AI announced their new AI avatar. And when you hear the term AI avatar, what do you mean? Well, it means that you can take a photo of yourself, or you can generate a photo of a fictional person, and then you can upload that photo to one of these services like HeyGen, and then you upload or type in a script of what you want that person to say. And just from the photo and your text script, then HeyGen generates a very convincing video with all the natural expressions and eye blinks and head nods and hair wisping in the wind or whatever, of basically an avatar, performing your script. And it's so incredibly convincing. And you get to choose different voices, of course, and there are different languages, obviously, and you can choose voices with different accents for some of these engines. It's so unbelievably convincing that just 2 days ago, I was 5 minutes into a video listening to an analyst who claimed to be a former high-level European official. I was 5 minutes into it before I realized, oh my God, this is AI. This is an AI avatar. It's so incredibly convincing that it's worth mentioning, kind of a red flag warning. here. So number one, you're going to see a lot of influencers that start using AI avatars instead of doing it themselves. I've already seen that. And sometimes they'll introduce that and they'll say, "Hi, I'm, you know, Jen's AI avatar," while the real Jen is off answering your emails or something. And then it's a video performance from the avatar that looks like Jen. So that's out there right now. And it's very convincing. Secondly, you're going to see, well, YouTube is already becoming, I don't know, 80% AI videos at this point. It's just heavily, heavily overtaken with AI videos. And you see, the AI avatars are so good that even YouTube's own engine can't often distinguish between human versus AI. And of course, one of the ways that you know the difference, I mean, listen to the way I talk. You know, a human is going to make some mistakes from time to time. A human is going to have a much more dynamic range, typically, unless they're just a boring human. You know, like, "Hello, welcome to today's economic update." You know, it's like, who wants to listen to that person anyway, right? But if you're listening to somebody and they make no mistakes at all, zero mistakes, after a couple of minutes, you should start thinking, wait a second. That's not normal. This looks like AI. If there's zero mistakes, right? And hardly any variation in pronunciation or gestures and so on. And again, it's all very realistic. Their eyes blink, you know? It's like that line out of the Terminator. "They have skin, bad breath, everything. They sweat, you know, they stink," right? That's not exactly the line out of Terminator, but you get the idea. So it's very, very convincing. And the other warning for all of you, please listen up. This is a cybercrime warning now at this point. Be careful, because you might receive a message on your phone with a video that appears to be a message from, let's say, your kidnapped son or daughter, if you have a son or daughter, or a kidnapped family member asking for ransom money. And it might be very convincing, because all that the hoaxers need is a photo of your family member. And if they have a sample of their voice, that's even better. And then they can generate this kind of kidnapping plea video, and they can send it to you, and they can say, "If you ever want to see, you know, your daughter again, send us, you know, 1,000 Bitcoin or whatever," that kind of thing. And people have fallen for that. They have fallen for that. So be extremely cautious, because right now, these AI avatars are incredibly convincing. Now, of course, on our books site, which is books.brightlearn.ai, we will be creating mini documentaries starting in 2026 based on the books. And in order to do that, we will use AI avatars to deliver the content, you know, to narrate the mini documentary. But we won't use AI avatars deceptively. We won't impersonate someone. You know, we're not going to try to trick you. I'll openly talk about it, that, hey, here's an AI generated mini documentary feature now for selected books. We've got, you know, 3-minute videos, and they're all AI generated. There's AI avatars, it's AI voice, it's AI, you know, background B-roll, it's AI charts, whatever. Just right out in the open, because it's not deceptive if you are, you know, clear, transparent about it, which is the way we operate. So when you see those AI avatars in 2026 from us, you will also be amazed. You're like, "What? That's not a real person? You didn't film that in a studio?" Nope. It's AI avatars. So there you go. Just heads up. Be aware of that. And that's what that term means, AI avatars. Now, as a side note, people can also animate things other than human faces. They can animate like a robot face or a dog's face or, you know, a furry face for all the furries out there that are into that. They can actually now have like a talking bunny rabbit or something. So all that's possible. You can have talking cartoon avatars, cartoon figures, you know, almost anything you can think of. If it's got a face, it can be animated and it can look like it's talking and the lips sync up and everything. And we've used multilingual translation technology to reanimate what I'm saying in other languages so that I can have highlights of one of my interviews and then we can put out the highlights, a shortened version, in Spanish or in Chinese or in Russian or what have you. And that's a very good use of the technology to reach a multilingual audience. And, you know, that's not deceptive. That's just saying, hey, here's me delivering information in other languages that I probably don't speak all those different languages, right? Or at least I don't speak them with that level of fluency. I mean, if I tried to deliver this podcast in Spanish or Chinese, it would be very basic. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to use the engines to do it. If I tried to deliver this in Russian, it would be one word, like, nyet, that's the whole podcast, sorry, over. That's the only word I know. And, I do know Pokrovsk. Yeah, I know some of the city names now because of the conflict with Ukraine. I know a few names. I know the Donbass region. How about that? Lugansk, Luhansk, Zaporozhia, what I think it's called. I mean, I know a few of those just from repetition, but it's not the same as knowing how to speak. All right, so we're going to jump into today's main topic here about Russia and Europe, and I'm going to have that as a standalone report. So we'll start that right now. So Western European nations, they really want a war with Russia, as you have seen. And they've lost their minds, which we'll get into some of that, but especially the leaders of, the leaders of the EU, but also not just the Brussels people, but the individual leaders of non-EU nations now, like the UK, but also members like France and Germany. They've all gone completely insane, and they desperately need war with Russia. They are cutting off all energy from Russia. They've just agreed to block any more energy inputs by January of 2027, so a little bit over 1 year away. And they are threatening to escalate a war with Russia because, of course, the UK needs this war in order to shore up their own corruption and power and to exterminate a lot of their young males who are beginning to get very angry about, you know, the corruption of the government itself. So in response to all these rumblings of increased war escalation, Alexander Dugin, who is a very prominent academic and philosopher in Russia, he's kind of a quasi-spokesperson for the Kremlin, but not officially, not really a spokesperson. And it's worth mentioning that his daughter was assassinated a few years ago after the start of this conflict. His daughter, who I think her name was Daria Dugin, she was killed in a car bomb. And we know that MI6 and the British leadership were involved in that, along with Ukrainian military people. And so Alexander Dugin his family has paid a very high price for what's happening in this war right now. So, Alexander Dugin was asked recently on a TV appearance about Europe and how Russia plans to deal with Europe. And he says the following. He says, in today's peaceful enthusiasm and rhetoric, I should add, this is an English translation. I believe he was speaking in his native Russian language. So this is a translation. I don't know who translated it. Anyway, he says, in today's peaceful enthusiasm and rhetoric, everything would be fine if we said that we won't go to war and have no claims against Europe, but in reality, we do have claims against Europe. He's speaking of Europeans, they think Ukraine belongs to them, while we think Ukraine belongs to us. And on this matter, we insistently assert that it's our problem, not theirs. In other words, we have to deal with this, is what he's saying. They, on the other hand, think it's their problem, not ours. He goes on and says, and this conflict between our interests and the interests of the European Union, at least its leadership, is escalating. They are doing everything to tear Ukraine away from us. We are doing everything to bring it back into our sphere of influence. This is a war, and this war is already underway. However, the Europeans want to take this war to a new stage. We sincerely advise them against it, but at the same time, as our president has said, we declare that we are ready for real war with Europe. All right, now there's more here, but I just want you to take in what he said so far. We declare that we are ready for real war with Europe. So he's implying that the current state of conflict with Ukraine is not exactly a real war. It's not a full-scale normal war. And then he explains that. He says, Vladimir Putin emphasized that in Ukraine, we are only liberating our own lands. There are our people there. You know, he's saying they're mostly ethnic Russians in the eastern part of Ukraine. He says, yes, they have gone mad, but we will heal them. He's saying, you know, we'll embrace them back into Russian society and then they will be okay because they're ethnic Russians and they have a history of being Russian. And, you know, they were part of the Soviet Union before the breakup in 1991, etc. So he says, healing the Europeans, however, is beyond our power. This independent but clearly collapsing civilization, referring to Western Europe, is in a deadly state, and everything is headed toward us treating it much more harshly than Ukraine. And then here's the emphasis. We will destroy all its basic military facilities and industry, period. And if necessary, he adds, we will wipe Europe off the face of the earth. Got it? I mean, he follows up and says, yes, we don't want this at all, but it won't be the selective, gentle, prolonged war that we're waging in Ukraine. Because here, talking about Ukraine, we're calming our own people, whereas there in Western Europe, we'll be destroying our enemies. And the experience we've gained in this war in Ukraine makes us much more prepared for war with Europe than the Europeans themselves are. Especially when you look at the Europeans' deplorable moral state, their rotten societies, their perverted ethics, the dominance of migrants, and the complete corruption of the new generation. Okay, he says, we don't see Europe as easy prey, but in any case, we can handle it. We've dealt with worse, he says. Napoleon was more serious, Hitler even more so. But I think we can deal with these freaks and perverts, these mad lunatics, the corrupt, the gender-swapped deviants, and simply the maniacs. And that's a pretty apt description of what, let's say, British royalty and British leadership has become. Freaks and perverts and mad lunatics, gender-swapped deviants. Yeah, sounds like Keir Starmer right there, right? Sounds like the German leadership. Sounds like French leadership. I mean, come on. Half these leaders, you know, they have like weird sexual deviant spouses and such. I mean, they're all into that stuff. I mean, maybe not every one of them, but by and large, they are. Because, yeah, they are freaks and perverts. And Alexander Dugin is correct about that. But the important part of what he's saying here is that, if I were to summarize this, you know, basically we have treated Ukraine gently, although, you know, maybe soldiers on the front lines would not necessarily agree with that. You know, war is war. You know, kinetic violence is violent. But Russia did not obliterate, for example, Kiev, didn't just bomb it into rubble like the way Israel did in Gaza. You know, Russia hasn't done that to any, you know, prominent civilian city. I know that's been done to towns and such in the practice of war. Buildings will be destroyed, but Russia has the means to take out entire cities, and they have specifically not done that. Like, for example, Odessa. Russia doesn't want to obliterate Odessa because it's a city with strong Russian history and cultural history and strategic importance and so much more. Russia would rather not destroy all of Ukraine, but rather would welcome the Ukrainian people who want to join Russia back into Russia. And then those who don't want to join Russia, they can become their own country as long as they agree not to join NATO, not to raise a giant military, and so on. I mean, those are Russia's terms, okay? But when dealing with Western Europe, the terms are completely different. It's like, and again, I'm paraphrasing, but hey, if you lunatics, if you think you want to go to war with us in Russia, we're going to wipe out your nations. And that's exactly what will happen. Russia has the means, the missiles, the nuclear missiles, the thermobaric weapons, the Poseidon underwater drones with nuclear warheads. Russia has the hypersonic missiles. Russia has Oreshnik missiles. Russia has the new, what's it called? The new nuclear-powered cruise missiles that have unlimited range. I've even forgotten the name of those, but Russia's got so many weapons that can reach London or Paris or any city in Germany or, frankly, any military base in Poland or Romania, for that matter, or in Italy. Russia can destroy whatever remaining industry still exists in those nations, and not that there's much. There's some remaining industry in France. Germany has suffered a collapse of its industry because of the loss of cheap power because of Nord Stream pipelines being destroyed by the United States military, of course. But the UK, I mean, what does the UK make anymore? Really, I mean, not much industry in the UK. They can't even build their own ships. So the climate cultists across Western Europe have already begun the process of destroying Europe's industry, and Russia is willing to finish the job. That is, they're not looking to do that. They're not going to initiate that. But if Western European countries want to continue to wage war against Russia, they're going to find their countries completely wiped out. That is the military industry, power grid infrastructure, ports, refineries that exist, you name it. Infrastructure destroyed, obliterated. And I think that's what Keir Starmer wants, actually. I think he's looking forward to that. Because I think he's a globalist agent to destroy the UK. And the thing about, in order to understand Russia, you have to understand the history of Russia's relationship with these European nations. And really, there are two major events that shaped Russian, or what we call today Russian national identity, and demonstrate its perseverance and its cultural adhesion. Those two events are, of course, 1812, the invasion by Napoleon. So this was when France decided that it was going to conquer Russia, and it didn't work out very well. And we'll get into that. But then also, of course, World War II. Now, there were other incursions into Russia, such as World War I, but World War II with Hitler, that was a devastating attack on Russia. And that cost Russia somewhere between maybe 25 million people, including millions of civilians, not just soldiers. And by some estimates, that number could be as high as 60 million people. So Russia has paid a very, very heavy price for Europe's arrogance and Europe's military conquest. And that's why it's so just pathetically laughable today to hear these EU leaders, von der Leyen and others, claim just with complete insanity that Europe has never attacked Russia, but Russia, Russia's carrying out unprovoked aggression against Europe. But Europe has never attacked Russia. Like, what did? Are you in kindergarten? How do you not even know? You ever heard of Napoleon? You ever heard of Hitler? Okay, we could just start right there, not to mention the other events. But neither one of those events worked out well for Europe. Actually, Europe was defeated in both of those cases. But it proved to Russia that there is something wrong with the minds of European leaders. There is something sick, psychotic, like a mental illness that has infected the fragile lizard brains of the British leaders, for example, or the reptilian brains of the French leaders, or what are the serpent brains of the German leaders, whatever they are. And they're defective. See, Russia is coming to the understanding that European leaders, and I'm not talking about the people, there is a class of leaders that it all runs the same bloodlines, all the same families. You know, David Icke has talked about this for years, and he's correct. It's all the same bloodlines, and there's something defective in those people. And Russia is coming to the realization that those bloodlines of the royal elite families that run Europe, that they need, in Russia's view, they need to be destroyed, because there will never be peace between Europe and Russia as long as those bloodlines continue to exist. And by the way, as context, those bloodlines also are the same ones that ran the Russia hoax against Trump. They're the same people that ran the censorship regimes involving big tech in America. They're the same groups that also targeted me with censorship, and many others, such as Sayer G and Dr. Mercola and so on, especially during the COVID years. So, yes, those bloodlines are evil and mentally ill. They are defective, and Russia believes they need to go. That Russia believes, at least this is my understanding, Russia believes that they will never live in peace as long as those bloodlines continue to exist. And over the years and over these wars, Russia has learned some extremely valuable lessons that are deeply ingrained into Russian identity. And if you're not familiar with what happened with the Napoleonic invasion of 1812, well, I looked up just a little summary here. So apparently Napoleon assembled somewhere between 600 and 700,000 troops. It was the largest army in Europe that had existed to that date, mostly drawn from France, but some troops from Italy, Poland, Austria, German states, etc. So it was really a European army. And in June of 1812, Napoleon's military invaded Russia, and they fought all the way to Moscow. They occupied Moscow, a city which had already been largely abandoned. It was burning. And you see, what Russia was able to do was to wage a fighting retreat where they were trading territory for victory of men, let's say. In other words, they were making Napoleon expend troops to gain territory. And Russia has been extremely good at this tactic. They use it again in World War II, and they've used it recently with Ukraine, where Russia is not overall that concerned about the territory itself. It's more concerned about eliminating enemy soldiers, because soldiers are very difficult to replace, whereas territory is easy to retake if you've defeated the enemy's soldiers, right? Whereas the West is always preoccupied with territory. Oh, we took a kilometer today, or, you know, or in America, you know, we took 100 square miles. Or what Zelensky does in Ukraine, we're going to defend that territory. We have to defend that city. Do not give up the territory at all. That's actually a losing strategy, because in defending territory that is difficult to defend, you can lose a lot of men. You can pay a very steep price in lost soldiers to hold on to a piece of land. Whereas if you were to wage a fighting retreat from that land, you could make the other side pay a heavy price for taking that land, you see, or taking that territory. Well, the West does not understand that, not even to this day. It's not even taught in military schools that I can tell, because nobody acts that way in the West. They're always about taking territory. Russia has a much more advanced understanding of the art of war. And it is what I said, you fight as you retreat. And as a result, in 1812, when Napoleon made it all the way to Moscow, winter was on the way, and of course, winters in Moscow can be rather brutal. And Russia refused to surrender. Russia continued to commit to fighting no matter what it took. And so Napoleon had no choice. Again, I'm simplifying this, but Napoleon had to retreat. And then it's estimated that 400,000 to 500,000 soldiers died during that retreat, all the way back to Paris. And as that retreat was taking place, guess what? Russia pursued and was fighting and killing huge numbers. I mean, again, almost 500,000 soldiers. And at the end of the day, Fewer than 100,000 soldiers of Napoleon's army made it back home, even though there were, at the start, 600 to 700,000 soldiers. So that was a major defeat for Europe. And it showed that Russia knows how to fight and win against European aggressors, which is what we're looking at right now. Europe is the aggressor once again. And they want to destroy Russia once again. So then after that war, and, you know, Russia lost a lot of people during that war as well. And then you fast forward to World War II. I know I'm skipping World War I, but World War II is the next major event impacting Russia. Of course, Adolf Hitler, who had signed a pact with the Soviets in 1939, saying that, you know, he would not attack them. Of course, he was not honest. Sounds like Europe again today, right? They never keep their agreements. They never keep their word. You know, European leaders and Western leaders have zero honor and zero integrity, just zero. You might as well not even negotiate with them because whatever they agree to, they won't keep their word. It's just actually pointless. I mean, look, they've stolen almost $300 billion of Russian assets that are held, well, most of it's held in the Euroclear system in Europe. And the European leaders are trying to steal that money and use it to fund the war against Russia. It's Russia's own money. But the EU leaders just want to steal it and call it legit. You know, I mean, that's how dishonest they are. Just some of the worst people that have ever lived on this planet are the people who are currently running the UK and the EU. They're just horrific human beings. I mean, and getting back to what Alexander Dugin said, he said, if necessary, quote, we will wipe Europe off the face of the earth. Should that happen, and I'm not hoping for it to happen, but if, let's just say, if Russia had secret weapons that could just blast away all the leaders of Europe and not harm the civilians, let's say, just completely obliterate all the elite bloodlines and just vaporize them all in one instant, do you realize that the entire world would celebrate? No one would shed a tear. Not even the citizens of those countries. You know, the French people would celebrate. The German people would celebrate, and the British people would absolutely celebrate. There's not such a weapon, obviously. So if there were any attack on European countries, there would be civilian casualties. We don't want to see that. But it may go to that. So anyway, getting back to World War II, it's very important to understand that there were, let's see, 3.8 million troops that were invading Russia along a 2,900 kilometer front. And those included troops from Romania, Hungary, Finland, and Italy, not just Germany. And the German troops advanced extremely rapidly. They encircled millions of Soviet troops, you know, because of their blitzkrieg type of tactics and so on. And they had made it almost to Moscow and Leningrad by the winter of 1941. Now, you need to understand that at that time, the Soviet Union was extremely impoverished and did not have good equipment. Hardly had ammo, hardly had guns, didn't have much armor, you know, armored vehicles, tanks, etc. I mean, they had a few, but hardly any. They weren't gearing up for war, you see, the way Germany was. And so the Soviets had to throw men into the war machine. They lost millions or tens of millions of men. And it looked like, in the early days, it looked like the Soviets were going to be utterly defeated and that Germany would conquer the Soviet Union and gain control over that vast territory. But then things happened. Things began to turn. The Battle of Moscow that spanned across the winter of 1941 and into 42, Germany was handed a huge defeat because of the incredible discipline and determination of many Russian civilians, including women, by the way. Russian women are tough women. Do not fight with Russian women, okay? They are tough. And then secondly, the Battle of Stalingrad, one that I've studied quite a lot in my study of history. That was that also spanned the winter into 1943. And the Battle of Stalingrad resulted in Germany losing its entire Sixth Army. And that's because the Russians surrounded the Sixth Army and cut them off from supply lines, forcing, you know, a mass surrender. And I think that was 100,000 plus troops or something like that, that the Germans lost right there. And you got to understand, and there's a key river right there, because Stalingrad, like most cities throughout history, are founded on rivers. And so that river was a natural barrier. I think there's even a movie about Stalingrad. You might want to watch it. It's a very educational and inspiring movie about the determination of the you know, modern day Russian people, or as Soviets back then, and the fight that they put up against the Germans. It was really quite remarkable. And at horrific cost of human lives. And then there was the Battle of Kursk in 1943, which was an armor battle. That's when the Soviets had been able to produce a lot more tanks. I forgot what variety, the early T tanks, whatever they were at the time, I think. And Germany lost that battle. But at the end of all of this, of course, Germany then had to, you know, I mean, look, the Soviet Union did most of the defeating of the Third Reich. What the Allies did, what America and France did on the beaches of Normandy and so on, yeah, that played a role, but it was actually very small compared to what the Soviets did to tie up resources and to destroy German soldiers and German armor. And ultimately, the defeat of Hitler belongs mostly to the credit of the Soviet Union, not the Allies, not the Allies. Now, again, the Allies played a role, but it was a minor role compared to the Soviets. We're not taught that in the West, of course. So in World War II, then, what the Soviets demonstrated and what was further ingrained into their culture is that if we persevere, we can defend our country against any European aggressor. Even Hitler, even Napoleon, or anybody, even, you know, groups of nations gathering together with hundreds of thousands or millions of troops in the case of World War II, that we, the Soviets, now modern day Russia, we can defeat them. And that's why those two wars in particular are still, they are sort of psychically engraved into the minds of the Russian people, the Russian hearts, and the Russian culture to this day. Families lost, I mean, there were entire families that were wiped out. And the memory of the sacrifice of that is deep in the Russian people today. Unlike in America, we didn't lose 20 million people in World War II, we lost a few hundred thousand. I'm not trying to diminish those lives. They were important sacrifices, but it was nowhere near the tens of millions that Russia lost. And also the United States of America itself, the 48 contiguous states, has never been invaded by an enemy nation that occupied it and bombed its cities and destroyed it. We were always buffered by the oceans. And we weren't at war with Canada or Mexico. I mean, not yet. Maybe Trump is going to make that happen soon with Mexico. I guess we're going to find out. But we have never been invaded and crushed and bombed and had our cities destroyed, had to have our women fighting against enemy men, soldiers, and seeing your women and children gunned down on the streets of your own cities at home outside your front door. In America, we have never seen that. We don't know what war really is in America. The Russians, culturally, they know what war is. They know what sacrifice is. And the reason it's important to understand this is because they know the cost of allowing European tyrants to continue to exist. If these European tyrants today, like the leaders of the UK and France and Germany in particular, if they are allowed to continue with their dangerous rhetoric and their threats, you know, and all their blame games and all their lies, like Europe never attacked Russia, they say. Are you kidding me? Today, Russia knows that if they just sit back and do nothing while that continues, they know where this is going. This is going to end up with a European attack on Russia yet again, because it's happened numerous times already in the past, not just 1812 and, 1941 through 44, right? It's numerous times, many other cases, including some in World War I and some pre-Napoleon as well. I believe, this is just my opinion, I believe that Russia is at a point in its history where, and with its advanced technology, etc., Russia is saying no more. We are not going to sit back and let these insane reptilian European bloodline leaders try to destroy us again. We're not going to sacrifice tens of millions of our people again. We're not going to watch Moscow burn again. We're not going to watch Stalingrad, under siege, mass starvation. We're not going to watch that again. Instead, what Alexander Dugin is saying is, essentially, we would rather, as he says, quote, we will wipe Europe off the face of the earth. That's his quote. And understanding the history of what Russia or the Soviet Union has been through, and understanding the insanity of the European leaders, doesn't it make a lot more sense now what Alexander Dugin is saying? Because what he's saying is what any rational person would say if faced with the same history and the same situation. You can't just sit back and let perverted maniacs that run Europe attack you again and again and again every, 75 years or whatever. You have to put an end to it. And that's what Russia is poised to do. And ending Western Europe as we know it wouldn't take much, because it's already on the verge of self-induced collapse. Just a few nukes, just a few thermobaric bombs, just a few Oreshniks, it really wouldn't take that much to bring the British Empire to its knees. And the reason I mention all this is because I believe that's what Russia is getting close to doing. I think it will only do it as a last resort. I think it will only do it as a desperate last option if all other options have been exhausted. I don't think Russia is looking to initiate that kind of thing, but it's very clear to me that Russia is willing to do it if it is an existential action necessary to defend Russia's future as a sovereign nation. And again, at this point, can you blame them? No, you really can't. Now, you know what else? None of the leaders in Europe have any knowledge of the things I've just told you. They don't learn anything about the history of Russia. They are ignorant about World War II, even when their own grandfathers were waging it. They're ignorant about 1812. They're ignorant about, really everything. They're ignorant, arrogant, incompetent people, the European leaders. They despise their own people as well as all Russians. They hold in their hearts extreme hatred for ethnic Russians. They talk peace, but what they mean by that is the complete surrender of Russia to Europe. And that is so laughable. That will never happen. Never. If anything, it's very clear to me that Western Europe, or Western civilization in Western Europe, will collapse. It's rapidly collapsing right now. The U.S. empire is also going to collapse. And the empires that will continue to define our multipolar world will be, of course, the Chinese empire, the Russian empire, and, Persia, Iran. I think they will be the three most prominent empires moving forward. And if you think about it, those empires are all much older than the United States of America and much older than Western Europe by far. Thousands of years of history for China and Persia. More than 1,000 years history of Russia as we recognize it today. Depends on how you want to define it throughout history, but it's more than 1,000 years old. And this perspective is almost unknown in Western countries. No one is taught this. The leaders don't know this. Members of the U.S. Senate and Congress don't know this. I doubt that anybody in Trump's cabinet knows any of this. I really don't think they know this. They don't understand history. They don't understand the determination of the Russian people. And that's why when Russia is trying to negotiate with America, you know, it would be like trying to have a dialogue with idiots, you know, like imagine if you found, I don't know, some baby ducks walking down the sidewalk and you were like, hey, baby ducks, can we negotiate a territorial resolution about this sidewalk? And the ducks representing the U.S. empire, the ducks, their response to that would be quack, 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 quack. And that's it, because they don't know anything. They don't even understand history. They don't have any cultural context. That's, you know, Witkoff. Quack, 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 quack. Who are the other negotiators that Trump sends out there? They're all ducks. Just quack, quackity, quack. They're not saying anything that shows any knowledge at all about the way the world actually works. And this is why the Russians are so frustrated, because it's like talking to idiots. It's almost pointless. Now, for the record, I'm not saying that Russia is a perfect nation, not by any means. Nor am I saying that I want to see the U.S. empire suffer or anything like that. I'm an American. I love my country. But I'm smart enough as an American to recognize that the Russians love their country, too. They want their country to succeed, just as I want my country to be abundant. But I don't want the success of America to come at the cost of some other people somewhere else. I don't believe in this model that the U.S. empire has been built on, a model of pillaging and threatening and sanctioning and stealing. That's the U.S. model. That's the European model. It's a model of pirates and rogues. I mean, it's a model of villains. I'm not on board with that model. I'm on board with the idea of peaceful coexistence with other nations and other cultures. I believe that our best shot at survival as a nation, the United States of America, is to back off from all the arrogance and the incompetence and also all the sanctions and dollar hegemony and all that, and learn to get along with the Chinese, learn to get along with the Russians, learn to get along with the Iranians. You know, learn to get along with Brazilians, etc. Stop trying to threaten and bomb and pillage and destroy the world. But, you know, that makes me have a minority view, because everybody else is like, it's war. Yeah. America. F. Yeah. You know, it's war. Yeah. The Department of War. We're going to kick ass. Yeah. You know, that's the attitude in the Trump administration. We're going to kick some ass. Yeah, good luck. Good luck, because you don't have Oreshnik missiles, you morons. You don't have anti-air defense systems that work, you morons. Look what happened when Iran launched missiles at Israel, and it was all U.S. defenses that did not work. You morons. All your hoorah BS doesn't actually stop Russian missiles, it turns out. And it doesn't build new technology, does it? Uh-uh. Nope. All your bluster and your chest beating, you know, it doesn't win wars. So if we want to get to peace, we've got to back off of that attitude, and we got to get to peaceful coexistence with other nations around the world, which means stop sanctioning and start learning how to trade and cooperate. That's the only way that we have a future in a multipolar world. So anyway, bottom line, I want America to do well. I want Ukraine to do well. I want Russia to do well, because you see, my philosophy is that we live in a world of artificial scarcity. It's the lizard-blooded controllers that have created scarcity as a means of control and mass enslavement of humanity. Actually, natural abundance is all around us and can be unleashed if we simply break free from the iron grip of the globalist elite controllers that want us dead. Never forget that. That the same British leaders that want to destroy Russia, they also want all of us to die because they're pushing depopulation. You know, whatever you think of Putin, he's not pushing depopulation. He wants families to have babies, healthy babies, intelligent, capable babies, you know? He's not pushing depopulation. That's a Western thing. It's like, kill everybody, you know? That's insane. But that's what Western leaders believe, and that's what they're pushing. And that's evil. It's demonic. And that's what Western leadership has become, is truly demonic. So pray that we could have some truth and love and compassion and honesty and transparency in our world, and pray that evil is eliminated or at least removed from power, so that we, the people of the world, might be able to live together in peace as neighbors and friends, sharing our cultures, our innovation, our ideas, our passion, our common love for things that make life worth living on this planet. We all share the same planet. We all share most of the same values. And the only reason there's conflict in the world is not because of us, not because of we the people. It's because these insane leaders, like the European leaders and the Department of War in the U.S., bombing everybody, threatening everybody, sanctioning everybody. It's Western civilization that is causing conflict all over the world and has been doing so since the end of World War II. You know, Confessions of an Economic Hitman and so much more. And that's the simple truth. If you stop the U.S. Empire from being the aggressor all over the world, we would be much closer to actual world peace. Think about it. So thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams. You can follow all of my work at brighteon.com and naturalnews.com. I'm also an AI developer, and I developed all the free AI tools that you can find at brighteon.ai, including our new very popular book engine that creates books free of charge on any topic in just minutes. It's extremely popular. And coming soon, we will have translations of our top books available in multiple languages, including Chinese and Russian and Spanish and Japanese and so on, and other languages, French and German as well. So all that's coming, and thank you for your support. God bless America, but also God bless us all. God bless humanity. Every one of us is divine. Every one of us deserves to live in peace. So I pray that we achieve that. Thank you for listening. Take care. We've got turmeric root powder back in stock at healthrangerstore.com. And the reason you want to get turmeric root powder from us is because, of course, turmeric is very frequently contaminated with lead. But we do all of our own testing. We've got an ISO accredited laboratory with multiple mass spec instruments, and we test for lead and mercury, arsenic, and cadmium as well, plus glyphosate. And for some of our products, we test for atrazine. For everything, including turmeric, we test for E. coli, salmonella. We test for yeast and mold, total plate count, and listeria, and many other things. So we test in-house to make sure that you get the cleanest foods and superfoods, nutritional supplements, and personal care products imaginable. And that's why people love us, and thank you for all your support. But go to our website. Here it is, healthrangerstore.com. And right here, you can just search for turmeric, or you can shop any of the other categories that we have and some of our sales and so on. But here's our turmeric root powder. It's back in stock right now. This is something that's very difficult for us to keep in stock. And of course, it's organic and it's lab tested on top of that. But we also have, and I'm showing it on my desk, we also have the turmeric tinctures available. We have our regular tincture and then our plus version, which has black pepper and ginger in it as well. And these products are incredibly popular. They're very delicious. People love them. And also they are lab tested like our turmeric powder. So if you want to learn about turmeric and why it's so beneficial, you can go to, any AI engine or use our AI, which is trained on nutrition. That's at brighteon.ai. And you can ask it, hey, how can I use turmeric? Give me some recipe ideas. Or what nutrients are found in turmeric and how might those benefit my health or support my natural health? You can ask it questions like that and you'll get very good informative answers. So use our store, healthrangerstore.com, to acquire these products that give you outstanding nutrition, and use our AI engines at brighteon.ai to learn about how they benefit you and how you can use them. So thank you for your support. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Take care. All right. I hope you found that very educational. Wow. There's so much we need to learn about the world and about each other and how we actually can live in peace. I've got a couple more special reports to play for you here. And remember, there's no interview today. But one of the things I wanted to show you is it's a demonstration of using the BrightLearn book engine. But I think I'm going to save that for Monday because I've got two other reports to share with you here. So I'm just going to push that out a little bit. Now, what we have coming up here is a special report about 2026 as the year of acceleration. And then I've got another report, which is sure to ruffle some feathers. It's called Why We Should Replace Corrupt Government with Open Source AI. Now, note that I'm saying open source AI, not closed source, you know, secret black box AI. No. I'm saying open source for full transparency. So the public can see what's happening and the public actually has the control over the prompts and the priorities of what the AI is doing in the role of government. And I'm talking about senators and members of the House, etc. Not just replacing workers at the DMV, although that's also a good idea in certain cases. So I'm going to play that first, actually. Why we should replace corrupt government with open source AI. And then after that, I'll play 2026, the year of acceleration. Before we get there, I just want to remind you that we depend on your support to build all of our platforms. You can support us at healthrangerstore.com. And we've got an incredible assortment of lab-tested, almost all certified organic products, ranging from nutritional supplements to personal care to storable foods. Again, all organic, laboratory-tested there on the foods category, plus home and survival and preparedness products as well. All of that is available, healthrangerstore.com. And you can now trade in your Loyalty Lion points at our store. You can trade those in for book tokens to generate books at brightlearn.ai, our book engine. So if you're wondering how to get tokens for the book engine, you just go to your profile page there, and then there's something there about like redeem tokens, and you can scroll down, and there's a lot of different things you can redeem tokens for. And one of those, redeem your loyalty points for different things. And one of those is to redeem it for a brightlearn.ai book token. So you could take advantage of that. Also want to remind you that we've got all of our affiliate partners listed at rangerdeals.com. Rangerdeals.com. Discounts, usually using the code RANGER, with different providers that I personally endorse and support, because it's a very small list, but it's just the companies that I find very valuable and high integrity. And you can save anywhere from, in some cases, 10%, in other cases, 15 or 20. It just depends on the vendor and what kind of sales they have going on. But usually the discount code is just the word RANGER, and you can get discounts on all kinds of things there. We've got the de-Googled phones. You know, we've got red light therapy devices and so much more. So check all that out at rangerdeals.com. And with that said, enjoy the rest of the show today, these other special reports. And then I'll be back with you on Monday with a brand new interview that I think you'll really enjoy. And I might have something for you this weekend. We'll see what happens. But until then, enjoy the rest of the show and stay safe. Take care. This podcast is about why we should replace most of Congress and much of our government with open source AI. I'm Mike Adams. I'm an AI developer. I built numerous AI engines. I'll mention some of them later, but welcome to the podcast. Now, right off the bat, I understand that this is controversial for some people, especially those who are not that familiar with AI they think that replacing government with AI would create a technocracy that would just enslave us all under a black box surveillance system. Well, that would be true if it were closed source AI run by companies like Google, Microsoft, OpenAI, Meta, etc. So if you hear anybody in government advocating to replace government workers with those systems, yeah, red flags, big time. Because they want, of course, a controllable secret black box that you can't look inside. You don't know what the model's running. You don't know what it's thinking. What I'm suggesting is exactly the opposite. I'm suggesting that the voters, for example, let's just take a member of, well, a senator. The voters, let's say, elect an AI senator. And then that AI senator has to be an open source reasoning model. And every thought and every piece of output, every text from that model is pushed out onto a web page in real time so that the public can see everything that model is thinking, every piece of communication. It's all fully transparent. And when the model is reasoning through a question, like, should I vote for this bill or should I not vote for this bill? You'll be able to monitor all the reasoning of the model. And importantly, not only do we have then full transparency, which we don't have with humans today. Human senators do secret deals in, you know, smoke-filled rooms, behind closed doors, trips to Epstein Island or Tel Aviv or wherever, all kinds of corruption and fraud with humans. But these AI models can't be corrupted by offering them, you know, money or sex or free trips on an airplane, whatever, because they don't have bodies. They don't exist in the 3D world, and they're not interested in any of that stuff. So, but not only do we use open source AI models, we then make sure that the voters get to decide the prompts and the priorities of the models. So this is really critical. Think about it right now. Currently, you have a senator that goes on the campaign trail and makes a bunch of promises. You know, during the campaign, they'll say, oh, I'm going to lower taxes. I'm going to support the Second Amendment. I'm going to support freedom of speech. I'm going to oppose censorship, etc. None of that is legally binding, by the way. None of that actually matters at all. And more often than not, that human, when they are sworn in as a senator, they immediately betray their constituents and they betray those promises. So it's like flipping a switch. All of a sudden they're in Washington. Big money starts showing up at the door. Oh, here's money from Big Pharma. Oh, here's money from AIPAC. Oh, here's money from Big Tech, etc. All of a sudden their positions completely change and they betray everybody. That's how it normally works. But with an open source AI system, that would be impossible, because the voters would vote on essentially the prompts or the priorities, the personalities, and the mind of the AI engine that is sent to Washington, D.C. to argue on behalf of constituents. And that AI model could not deviate from that. It is mathematically impossible for it to do so, because it's following the prompts of the voters. So if the voters decide to put in a prompt, like, you must protect the First Amendment, you must oppose censorship, then that's exactly what that AI senator is going to carry out on the floor of the Senate. And that senator will argue in favor of the First Amendment without being compromised or corrupted. So right there, this would be a major improvement over humans in Congress. But let's talk about government workers in other areas of government, because, you see, the government sector, the public sector, is the last sector that's going to embrace AI. Why? Well, because government jobs, and this is especially true in states like California at the state government level, but it's also true nationwide to some degree, government jobs are the cushy jobs where you get great benefits, great salaries, great vacation. But you don't really have to work that hard, typically. I know there are exceptions to this, but overall, you don't have to get that much done. It's government. There's no competition, you know? There's nobody competing with the DMV. There's nobody competing, really, with delivering the mail. Why do you think the post office is so slow and so broke And they have the dumbest ideas, like their electric mail trucks that never worked. Yeah, because there's no competition. So there's no accountability in government. And as a result, they don't want AI there because AI brings in efficiency, rational thinking, cost savings, and much faster performance. If you thought AI could replace a lot of private sector jobs like customer service jobs because AI is faster and better and cheaper than, let's say, a customer service rep, which it is, well, you should consider just how much better AI is than a government worker, a typical government worker who is slow and inefficient and typically not that great at their job. Again, I know there are exceptions. I'm not saying every government worker is like this, but by and large, you know, they're not very competitive people. That's why they love their jobs, because it's kind of a lock on getting a salary and benefits without actually having to compete in the private sector, okay? AI would just obliterate that and could replace, over time, 80 or 90% of government workers, which would actually make government work better. So you wouldn't have to wait as long for your, I don't know, your immigration form or your small business loan or your government grant or whatever it is. You wouldn't have to wait as long. It would happen more quickly, more efficiently, and at much lower cost. We could save all kinds of money and maybe reduce the budget deficit. Although, of course, they're going to keep printing trillions of dollars no matter what. But there could be significant cost savings from this. And the key is that, in my opinion, we must demand the running of open source models, so that every government worker is accountable, every government AI worker. They're all accountable. We can see what they're thinking. We can see what they're saying. We can actually go to a web page and we can monitor their inner dialogue. We actually get to read the minds of the open source AI, which is very different from the way it is today. Obviously, today, you know, again, it's a secret. And the worst part about government is the people running it right now, because they're corrupt, because they're slow, they're inefficient, they're vindictive. Look at all the radical leftists who are opposing the Trump administration, and they're deliberately trying to cause chaos within the bureaucracy. They don't want government to work when Trump is president. And when they control the White House, they also don't want government to work very well, but they do want to use it as a money laundering slush fund operation through USAID and other, you know, let's say EPA grants that go out to all these left-wing nonprofits that funnel those funds back into the campaign contributions for Democrats. I mean, it's a giant con. And AI could end that con, because AI would, by definition, it would be forced to represent the people and their prompts, their priorities. And you can bet that Democrats especially do not want that. They do not want AI to be working in government at all. And so if you think about it, the people that love government structures, which Democrats really love big government, they want to keep government slow, inefficient, and corrupt so that they can control it and twist it to their uses. Whereas you and I might want much smaller government, but if it's still run by humans, it's still going to be corrupt, because humans are easily corruptible, especially in government, especially in the Senate. You know, when there's money on the table, hey, they take the money and they compromise. AI would not compromise. And again, AI would be transparent, 100% visible, no secrets. And that's the way it should be. You've seen those memes, haven't you, that say that members of the Senate should wear like a coat emblazoned with the logos of their corporate sponsors, kind of like race car drivers, you know, so that when the senator is speaking, you could see, oh, it's Pfizer. Yeah, it's Raytheon. It's Microsoft, whatever. That would be transparency. And we don't have that right now. But with open source AI, we would absolutely have that transparency. We would know what it's thinking. We would know who it's talking to. and it could have conversations with all kinds of people. It could actually respond to and listen to more of its constituents. It could take into account the suggestions of its own voters instead of just largely ignoring them, which is what most senators do. So really, AI can give us better government than human government. And I'm not a pro-government person, don't get me wrong. I think government should be sharply reduced by at least 90%. And it's far too big and too powerful, and it does far too many things in society, and, you know, it takes away your freedom, etc. But if we're going to have government functions, such as, let's say, approving your ATF application for a suppressor, I would much rather that process happen more quickly and more efficiently and more accurately. And that means AI. You know, the same thing with, think about it, handling benefits requests, you know, food stamp benefits, handling applications for grants, handling immigration, handling, you know, all these functions, visa applications, driver's license, you know, DMV operations. It would be much more efficient with AI. Now, interestingly, the same thing is true with the judicial system. We don't need human judges at this point. We really don't. And human judges, just like human government workers, can also be very corrupt. And many of them are. They're hopelessly corrupt. And they will refuse to listen to the evidence of the case. They've pre-decided the outcome of the trial, like they railroaded Alex Jones over the Sandy Hook trial. You think Alex Jones got a fair trial? Not a chance. Alex Jones would have had a much better trial if the judge had been AI, an AI reasoning model, with instructions to follow the law, follow the rules of evidence. Alex Jones would have been vindicated because the whole case would have been thrown out if the judge followed the law. So I think right now, every trial that we have in America, whether it's civil or criminal, I think that the parties involved should have the option to choose an AI judge. And in criminal cases, that should be the defendant's choice. I want to choose an AI judge because I don't think the human judge is going to be fair. The human judge is a leftist or whatever. The human judge doesn't like me because I'm white or black or Asian or whatever. I want an AI judge that's going to do a better job. That should be an option right now. And then in civil cases, I think that if both parties agree to an AI judge, then they should have that option of having an AI judge. The AI judge can hear all the evidence. It can assess everything. It can make a decision that is congruent with the law without being an activist judge. See, the problem today is all these activist judges that are, of course, corrupt humans, usually left-wing corrupt humans, who don't want to follow the law. And the same thing is true on the U.S. Supreme Court. We have activist left-wing judges on the Supreme Court that, number one, are dumber than AI. I mean, AI is smarter than those left-wing judges, which isn't very difficult to achieve, it turns out, because they're super low IQ leftists sitting on the Supreme Court bench. Yeah. But also, AI is, it's going to know more about case precedent, history, the Constitution, everything that's relevant to the case. AI will have a much better grasp than any human judge. And in my view right now, I would much rather have AI running the Supreme Court if it's open source. It's got to be open source, again, so that the public can see the thinking and the conversations and can analyze every decision and how every AI judge arrived at that decision. But AI would do a much better job than human judges, and they could process one court case every day. So talk about moving things more quickly. We could clear out the backlog of civil cases and criminal cases and even Supreme Court cases by applying AI reasoning models that are open source. I mean, that technology is available right now. And I know, I hear you, some people might say, well, but AI doesn't have human values. Senators don't have human values. Have you noticed? Your government workers don't have human values. They're evil. You know, your IRS auditor doesn't have humanity, okay? Stop arguing with the stupid argument that government workers have compassion and empathy and humanity. No, they don't. No, they don't. They're horrible. In some cases, they're evil. They wield their government power like a weapon over others. They are psychotic. AI would be a far better replacement than a lot of those government people. I mean, the regulators, think about it. The FDA, the EPA, the CDC, well, the USDA, etc. Those are power-hungry tyrants that run those agencies. Don't tell me that, oh, we need to defer to their humanity. There's no humanity there. They stopped being human, you know, a decade ago. When their pension started adding up, they stopped being human. So AI can actually be more human than the humans in government, because the humans in government are barely human. You see what I'm saying? And AI could actually be prompted to respect human values like truth and honesty and access to food and water, access to knowledge, access to freedom of speech and freedom of religion, etc. It's the humans in government that are destroying your rights. It's the humans that are making a mess of everything. AI would be far better at respecting your rights. And if you think about it, putting an end cap on this, law is just code written in words. And AI, right now, AI agents are the best coders in terms of computer code on the planet by far. There's no human that is better than an AI coder. Well, why would that be any different when it comes to law? There is no human that can be better than an AI lawmaker or an AI law decider, which is called a judge, or an AI law implementer, which is called, you know, a regulator or someone in the executive branch. They are implementing the law. AI will do that better than any human. And it's time for us to think seriously about moving in this direction. We need to elect AI representatives in the House, AI senators. We need to have AI engines in the regulators that are focused on things like food safety or immigration or whatever, or, you know, pesticide enforcement, things like that. AI will make those functions more efficient. And the beneficiaries of all that will be we the people. In the meantime, if you want to use all of my AI engines, they're all free and very popular now, especially the book creator, which is at brightlearn.ai, or you can see a hub for all of our AI engines at brighteon.ai. Check it out. We've got an AI chatbot. We've got an AI news trends analyzer and news spider. We've got our AI book creator, and we have an AI vaccine research engine that you can find at vaccineforensics.com. So check them all out. They're all free. And there you'll see the power of AI. And it's only going to get better and smarter and more detailed. So this is just the beginning. Check it out. Thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Take care. Looking ahead to 2026, it's important to realize that we are actually living through the final stage collapse of the U.S. empire. And while it's not going to just collapse all at once, or even entirely, the collapse will accelerate in 2026. And so I'm going to call 2026 the year of acceleration. But acceleration toward what? Well, a number of things. You're going to see accelerated inflation. You're going to see accelerated unhappiness and social or civil revolts. More protests, for example, against the Trump administration. More uprisings, more people expressing their extreme unhappiness, often about their economic situation. There will be accelerated job losses. There will be accelerated hunger and food scarcity. On the international scale, we're also going to see accelerated conflict, more wars, even as possibly the U.S.-Russia war via Ukraine, that's headed for some resolution, but the EU-Russia war is going to be catapulted into a much more accelerated state, let's say. In other words, even if the U.S. decides that it doesn't want to fight Russia, Well, most of Europe does want to. I mean, the leaders of the European countries. So that's going to accelerate no matter what. Clearly, the EU is on a suicide track, and we could call it suicide acceleration for the European countries. Most of them, not all. Hungary doesn't want to commit suicide. I'm not sure about Poland, but definitely France, Germany, and the UK all want to commit suicide. And they're going to achieve that. It's exactly where they're headed. I don't think Italy wants to be part of that, though, either. We'll see. Certain factions do, but not all of it. All right. So in terms of acceleration, we're also going to see massive acceleration of AI technology. And that's going to lead to more job losses. But also, it's this weird duality that I call, well, really the Skynet duality or the Skynet dilemma. It's where you're going to have, you know, job losses, but at the same time, you're going to have radical abundance in terms of digital content and assets and creativity and tools in the digital space. So with the rise of machine cognition being very, very capable, you're going to see an acceleration of, shall we say, digital abundance in 2026 and beyond, especially as the price of AI compute continues to drop rapidly. But as that is happening, then, of course, more jobs will be replaced, so fewer humans will have incomes, and that's going to accelerate poverty and homelessness. So, yeah, you're going to see the real estate market impacted through 2026 in an accelerated way. That is, housing prices overall will fall quite a lot. Maybe not in every area. There may be migrations into places where people want to live, like Texas, for example. But overall, in real estate markets across the country, we'll probably see some valuation losses in 2026. The money printing will be accelerated in 2026. So the dollar will lose its value in an accelerated fashion, which means that the prices of gold and silver denominated in dollars will rise on an accelerated schedule. Yes, you're going to see, I believe, well, in my mind, there's no question. You're going to see silver crossing over $100 an ounce in 2026. And you may recall that earlier this year, just this last summer, I predicted silver would cross $50. And that's when it was only, I don't know, 30-something maybe. So now it's 57, 58. It's teasing $59 or $60 an ounce. Sometime in 2026, that'll be $100. In my mind, there's no doubt, but I guess we'll have to see. The market manipulators are working overtime to try to keep that price down, but I'm not sure they can hold it down much longer. The other big factor that you need to keep in mind for 2026 is the accelerated time compression. So events will move more quickly. You're going to feel like you're on a little bit of a different timeline where even the flow of time itself is more rapid. You're going to see events arriving into your consciousness at a pace that none of us are used to. The news cycle will become rather frantic, and it will be hard to keep up. And that's between the AI announcements and the robot announcements and the war and the currency collapse and the, you know, grocery inflation and all the protests and just everything that's going on. It will all be happening in an accelerated way. And that is going to lend itself to an overall feeling of, what, uncertainty, discombobulation among the people. A lot of people are going to feel like they are losing their grip on reality. And so, yes, you'll see an acceleration of mental health concerns or issues throughout 2026. And probably you'll see more suicides as well, which is very unfortunate, as more people lose everything. Because I'm also anticipating an accelerated schedule of bank failures. So this will happen throughout 2026. We'll see bank failures, and those will be connected to, at first, commercial real estate gone bad. Because a lot of those debt bills are coming due in 2026. And there's massive exposure because following the COVID years, there hasn't been a return of people to office buildings with cubicles, and probably they will never return. So we have a massive inventory of commercial real estate across the Western world that has no use because the world's not structured around people who commute to an office building to work in a cubicle anymore. Those days are over. So we have a massive oversupply of commercial office space. So there's going to be a massive reset in that market. And then later, and this will spill into 2027, we're going to see consumers defaulting on their debt at a very large scale because of job losses. And remember that consumers currently owe over $18 trillion in the United States. $18 trillion is in medical debt, student debt, auto slash car loans, and home loans. Those are the four big areas, and you're going to see massive defaults across all those areas, which will expose a lot of lenders and banks and financial institutions to those loans. So if you thought The Big Short was interesting back in 2008, the subprime mortgage collapse, that's nothing compared to what's coming. We're going to see some things that you never could have imagined, financially speaking, with defaults, etc. And in terms of navigating this, you absolutely do not want to have counterparty risk. So you want to be very cautious about any kind of dollars you have in the bank or exposure in the stock market. I was just interviewing a person earlier today who said if he had extra cash, he would be just buying crypto, gold, and silver, and that's it. Things that you can have self-custody. Because none of us who are informed trust the system. We don't trust the banks. We don't trust the FDIC. We don't trust the government. We don't trust the system to continue to function. We don't know when it's going to crater. But it's better to be out of that system and be fully prepared with your own self-custody before the day comes that the system implodes, if it does. So getting outside the system in every way that you can, with your food supply, with your medicine, with your finances, with your knowledge, with your communications, etc., getting outside the system is going to be a very important strategy in 2026 and beyond. Now, speaking of that, some of the fallout of all of this that I've talked about means we will see accelerated auto repos and foreclosures on homes as the lenders or the borrowers, default on their debt. Car repossessions are going to break records, and home loan defaults are going to be like we saw in 2008, maybe even worse. It won't be pretty. As a result, a lot of asset prices will crater. And of course, the wealthy elite, they're sitting in cash waiting to buy up the assets for pennies on the dollar as the masses of Americans are homeless and desperate and hungry in many cases. So it's going to be the great taking, as they say. It's going to be a reset. And those people who are not prepared for the reset are going to be just really destroyed by it. Really destroyed. So, of course, an important strategy is gold and silver or crypto. I prefer privacy crypto like Monero or Zano. Gold and silver is critical, I believe, in this time. Now, don't take this as financial advice. I'm not your financial advisor, but gold and silver will make it through this as they always have. Precious metals will survive all of this, whereas currency, I'm not so sure about. But psychological preparedness is also going to be important through 2026 because, as I mentioned earlier, we'll have a lot of accelerating mental health issues. Some people will lose their minds as they're being kicked out of their homes, or they wake up and find out that their bank deposits have vanished because the bank has failed and there's no bailout coming. That will happen. And people are going to lose their minds. You're going to see a rise in violent crime. You're also going to see a rise in just people who snap, People who snap and, someone in a car that might try to, smash through the front gate of the White House or some silly attempt like that. That's not going to go well. They will be probably shot dead immediately on sight, so don't try that at home. But watch out for people who are losing it. You're going to see a lot more people like that. So it's a good reminder that in 2026, you know, try to go easy on the people around you. If you're in traffic and the traffic has crazy drivers, you know, don't go insane honking your horn and flipping people off and everything, because that might be the final thing that makes somebody snap. They might be right on the edge, and then you honk at them and like, that's it, that's the last straw, you know, and they go off on you, ramming you with their car or something. So be cool. Let other people have their space. It's going to be a lot of desperation, a lot of reckoning out there. A lot of people realizing that everything they've been taught was a lie, and everything they thought they could trust in, like the banks, the dollar, the government, the treasury, etc. Yeah, it's all going to crumble, and it will cause psychological fracturing among a huge number of people. So you're going to need to give them space and give them some compassion, because they're going to get sort of red-pilled all at once, whereas you and I, you know, it took us many years to gain all this knowledge. Some people are going to get red-pilled instantly. The instant red-pill experience, which is not nice, to just suddenly realize everything was a lie, you lost everything, you're penniless and homeless, and you've been replaced by a robot, yeah, that's not going to go well. So be as understanding as you can. Obviously, try to help people as much as you can. But like in an airplane situation, you got to help yourself first. You need to be prepared and ready. And if you've been listening to my podcast for any period of time, you're already there. You're well prepared for this year that's coming, 2026. You're already prepared. And while you might need to shore up a couple of areas where you could use maybe, a little more storable food, a little more first aid, maybe you need to replenish some things that you've used, that's fine. But overall, you're prepared. And you're better prepared than probably, 99,999 people out of 100,000 people. Maybe out of 1,000,000 people. I mean, you are at the top of the game here in terms of knowledge and preparedness. So stick with that and you'll make it through. As always, I will do my best to keep all of our AI engines online for you, to give you free access to all of our knowledge. And importantly, our books engine at books.brightlearn.ai soon will be offering full downloads of entire categories of books. So you can download all the PDFs all at once in one giant zip file for each category. And in doing so, you'll be able to collect all the books, get them on your computer, on a thumb drive, on your hard drive, whatever you have, and you'll be able to access those books permanently forever, completely free. There's no digital rights management. You don't need an internet connection, etc. So as the system begins to break down, I believe that it's important for you to have local knowledge, local access, so that you can run, you know, a laptop, maybe a desktop computer off solar power, or a tablet or a phone. And we're going to make all of this knowledge available to you in various formats, including more audiobooks and podcast formats. And coming up next year, if the system holds together long enough, we'll start producing videos, mini documentary videos about our books at books.brightlearn.ai. So use the time between now and then to, number one, generate the books that you want. And then secondly, download all the books that you want. And also download our AI engine so you can use it locally. And that's free at brightu.ai. So check it out there. So thank you for your support. Thank you for helping us achieve these goals of helping you back and keeping you informed and creating tools and platforms for you. We can make it through this. I hope that even as 2026 will be a year of acceleration, I hope you understand that I'm actually an optimist about where all this is headed. And I think that we can make it through the year together. All it takes is the right mindset, the right preparedness, the right tools, the right supplies in some cases, but I think you're already well prepared in all those areas, so yeah, you're going to be fine. You're going to make it through. We all are. Not everybody will, but everybody listening to this will. So that's a good place to be, actually, and help as many as you can. Pray for those that you can't help. Some have refused to listen. For all these years, they have insisted that everything's fine, everything's going to be great. Yeah, well, you know, it's a harsh day when they realize that they've been living a lie. You know, it's that instant red pill effect. So pray for them, but be ready for them to lose their minds also. That's going to happen. All right, thank you for listening. Mike Adams here, the Health Ranger. Take care.
Stock up on Health Ranger's nascent iodine. Highly bioavailable, shelf-stable, non-GMO, and lab-tested for purity. A bug-out bag essential. Only at healthrangerstore.com.